and you're with me, Noel Devine, on The Good Life on ABC Radio and on your pod. And my guest is Michael Jensen, author of a book, You, An Introduction. Michael Jensen, it's a name I think people recognise.
Yes, that's right. I'm related by dint of birth to my father, of course, as everyone is, to the Archbishop of Sydney, Peter Jensen.
And you are also a minister, though, an Anglican minister.
Yeah. I'm a minister in the Diocese of Sydney, and I teach theology to would-be trainee ministers at Moore Theological College.
Now, that gives a bit of background for those who are approaching your book, You, An Introduction.
Yeah. It's a book inviting you to consider who you are, but it's hopefully blowing that question apart and overflowing that question. I thought of it at first as a sort of self non-help book. Really, it's a book which tries to get you to understand yourself by looking at others, and most especially at your maker, at your creator, at God, in the context of who you are according to the person who made you, designed you.
Well, this is what struck me about it. It's not really a theology book at all. In fact, it's written, I think, for access, for easy access. I found it easy to read through. But it is assuming that there's a relationship between, if you're going to lead the good life, as it were, which is what this segment's about, it's assuming that there is a God, and I have to work out who I am in relation to that.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people do assume that there is a God. I think it's a safe assumption for many, many people. Also, I want people to take it on as an experiment, see what it's like. Do the ideas in the book, do the ideas in the Christian Bible actually have an explanatory power? Do they make sense? I think they actually make a surprising and shocking sense. Not necessarily an obvious at first grasp sense, but they surprisingly click into place when we're thinking about who we are.
I would be giving listeners a wrong impression if we were to leave them with the idea that this is all about Bible stuff. It quotes Bible and it does touch on it from time to time. But a lot of what this is about popular culture, trying to relate popular culture. You start off with anxiety, anxious me. Why?
Well, I think that the questions that theology, the Bible, addresses are actually real-world questions. I think they touch down in the real world and they pop up in popular culture and in high culture too. They're there because they're real-world questions and the questions that human beings classically ask or always asking. In particular, I think we're asking a particular set of questions right now. I think it's a very anxious time. This is why I started. It's an anxious time to be a person because a lot of things are threatening or questioning our identity. To be a person trying to construct yourself, be a person, find your identity, make yourself, you're sort of living in the middle of a bunch of tensions. You want to kind of be a great body, for instance, but then we love being an almost bodiless person on the internet. So we've got this sort of love-hate relationship with our bodies, which I think is sort of evidence that all is not well in the postmodern soul. There are cracks there, but the people are asking questions that the Bible also asks and addresses. I had some ministry experience in a high school and also with people in the sort of 18 to 25 age group, and this was the kind of world in which they seek to define themselves.
And you're 30-something yourself?
Ancient, possibly, 38.
Why was anxiety a beginning point? Was that something you were dealing with yourself, or is that something you've observed around you as you've come into contact with younger people?
Yeah, both and. I think I'm a person who wants to be thinner. I watch television and I see better selves within myself. I kind of know that I'm falling short of my potential. But then also as a teacher and minister to people, particularly younger people, I suppose, I could see that they're being told in all sorts of different ways to be a particular person. One of the most alarming things, I think, is that they're told all the time to look inside themselves to find out the true self that they ought to be. And I think it's a very alarming thing to ask a young person to do because, frankly, when we look inside, we're not always happy with what we see. That's not always a great place to look. And in fact, one of the aims of the book is to turn people around and say, look, don't look inside necessarily, look around you to others, but also look above you to the source of your being.
So it is a book about how to define identity. Is that fair enough to say? Or how do I define who I am?
Yes, trying to grab that question and not necessarily give an easy answer, but certainly to kind of open up that conversation, show how the Bible addresses that, but also show how Jesus Christ enters that picture as a kind of person who people really respect and think was in many ways a model human being.
You talk here about hatred of the body and you talk about uncomfortableness of the body, which you touched on before as well.
Yes.
What sort of things are you observing socially and what are young people saying to you that gives you the sense that there is an ill-ease with the body?
Well, I think you can see in the way that people now are seeing the body as a canvas on which they ought to paint the self. So, you know, we see these things in body piercing and tattooing. There's nothing necessarily wrong with those, of course, but they're evidence that people are trying to take control of their bodily self and mark it out as their own. They feel in some way, and just some interviews that I mentioned in the book with piercing aficionados, this came out, they felt once they had pierced and tattooed themselves that they'd somehow asserted control over themselves. And I think that's evidence of a discomfort with the self. And of course we have the am I too fat, am I too thin problem, the weight loss, weight gain problem.
The image of the body in media and what we should look like, as it were.
Yes, always in front of us. That's a constant thing that people are living with, this sort of voice telling us that our desire for food is somehow, is it good, is it bad? Should we indulge, should we not? Should we answer our stomachs or not?
So what answer do you come up to? What do you propose in this book? What's the answer to that discomfort with body that you've been perceiving? How do you go about getting an answer or getting a settlement for yourself if you're anxious about it?
I think, again, that the answer is not to turn in internally. I think the answer is to look to the way in which Jesus Christ dealt with people who were also anxious about their bodies, the way in which his touch was a healing touch, and the way in which he both brought and promised a kind of bodily wholeness. That's both a present reality, but also it looks towards the future, the way in which the Christians speak about the resurrection, which is a wholeness of body, of course, for the future. It's a hope that we have.
Is this book written for Christians?
It's written for Christians, but also for people who aren't Christian. It's not I don't think it's a particularly preachy book. I would hope that anyone who is interested in the question of who they might be would come in and be able to read and find this book both accessible, I should say, and challenging. I blogged the book in the first instance, and there's some comments that I included in the book.
It's interactive in its development, yeah.
That's right. And some of the people who blogged, some of them I don't even know who they are, and some of them aren't Christian, or they're very different from me, or they live in America, or they live in who knows where. So I'm hoping that at that level, that certainly people found the blog challenging and accessible at the same time from a variety of backgrounds. So I would certainly hope the book is in the same vein.
Is it fair to say, if you use a big word like anthropology, if you're talking about how to define what a human person is, this is without doubt very biblical and Christian in its approach to what a healthy human being is?
Yes, I make no apologies for that. I'm a Christian theologian, so that's what I do. I think that's something almost anyone could at least come in and try on. I think the Bible over history has had a huge power. People have found this, that it speaks very powerfully to their sense of self. And we still have the echoes of it today, so that even a Richard Dawkins, who doesn't believe in God, still gives very strangely biblical answers to questions about the human self. So why not come in and see whether the Bible still is making that kind of, it still has that kind of explanatory power, that power to both challenge you and explain what's happening to you.
The book is called You, of course.
Yes.
Is it influenced by individualism as a philosophy, or is it trying to answer individualism as a philosophy?
It's both influenced and trying to answer. I think I see individualism around me everywhere. I think this is an age that
encourages it, of
encourages
course.
Individualism and yet yearns for community at the same time. So just in my meeting with people in the community, it's surprising how little community there actually is in Australia, for instance. And so it's trying to use that individualist question, who am I, to really show that you can't really be an I without another, without others, and of course I think, of course, to without God.
Is the individualism you're addressing here, is this really the source of the anxiety that you're talking about?
I think so. I think our turn inwards, our trying to find ourselves by disappearing deeper and deeper into our own navels, is really causing a lot of the anxiety we see. We're focused so much on our own self-authentication, our self-identity, that we forget the context in which the way in which we're made, in fact, to be other-centered beings, that we can't be human beings without other human beings.
You go to statistics, and I know that one thing you were concerned about is the move towards single-resident households in Australia.
Yes.
Why did that strike you?
It struck me that people are really almost trying to protect themselves from one another. It's increasingly the case that relationship breakdown is marking our society, and that loneliness is an experience that's not just a kind of bodily one. It's a sort of soul experience, isn't it?
You point out that nearly a quarter of Australian households in the 2001 census,
yes,
are single resident. Nearly, yes, a quarter of all households.
That's right.
There is a fairly traditional, you're actually making quite a traditional argument for marriage and for family, aren't you?
I don't think it's traditional. It has echoes of tradition. The thing about Jesus Christ is that he both upholds the family, but he also challenges the family. He doesn't want you to make he doesn't want to put the family up on a pedestal. He calls people away from their families in a way to serve him as priority, and also to accept people who are not their blood family members into their family. So he actually challenges us to be hospitable across family boundaries.
Is the book an argument for connection?
Not just connection on its own terms. I think I want people to think not just about connecting with other people, but about connecting with God.
You're assuming connections that go beyond individual friendships into something broader.
Certainly. I mean, the original meaning of church is gathering, and I suppose I'm arguing for gathering, but a particular sort of gathering, a gathering after the real man, the true human person, the one who lived the human life the best, and that I think is Jesus Christ, who models for us. And many Australians still think this, of course, that Jesus Christ lived the human life the way it should have been lived.